await orders, do not reply. Krydike obeyed, of course, but not before half the patron lines in the galaxy had sent out their warships to find Streaker. Toshio blinked. Something. A resonance echo at last? Yes, the magnetic ore detector showed a faint echo toward the south. He concentrated on the receiver, relieved at last to have something to do. Self-pity was becoming a bore. Yes, it would have to be a pretty fair deposit. Should he tell Hikahi? Naturally, the search for the missing crew fan came first, but a shadow fell across him. The party was skirting the edge of a massive metal mound. The copper-colored mass was covered with thick tendrils of some green hanging growth.
"Don't get too close, little hands,"
Kipiru whistled from Toshio's left. Only Kipiru and the sled were this close to the mound. The other fins were giving it a wide berth.
"We know nothing of this flora," Kipiru continued. "And it's near here that Phippet was lost. You should stay safe within our convoy."
Kipiru rolled lazily past Toshio, keeping up with languid fluke strokes. The neatly folded arms of his harness gleamed a coppery reflection from the metal mound.
"Then it's all the more important to get samples, isn't it?"
Toshio replied in irritation.
"That's what we're here for."
Without giving Kipiru time to react, Toshio banked the sled toward the shadowy mass of the mound, entering darkness as the island blocked the afternoon sunlight. A drifting school of silver-backed fish seemed to explode away from him as he drove at an angle along the thick fibrous weed. Kipiru squeaked in startlement behind him, an oath in primal Delphin, which showed the fin's distress. Toshio smiled. The sled hummed cooperatively as the mound loomed like a mountain on his right. Toshio banked and grabbed at the nearest flash of green. There was a satisfying snapping sensation as his sample came free in his hand. No fin could do that. He flexed his fingers appreciatively, then twisted about to stuff the clump into a collection sack. Toshio looked up and saw that the green mass, instead of receding, was closer than ever. Kipiru's squalling was louder. "Crybaby," Toshio thought. "So I let the controls drift for a second. So what? I'll be back in your damned convoy before you finish making up a cuss poem." He steepened his leftward bank and simultaneously set his bow planes to rise, then realized it was a tactical mistake, for it slowed him down just enough for a cluster of pursuing tendrils to arrive. There must be larger sea creatures on Kithrip than the party had seen so far, but the tentacles that fell about Toshio were obviously meant to catch big prey.
"Oh, coino ante, now I've done it!"
He pushed the throttle over to maximum and braced for the expected surge of power. Power came, but not acceleration. The sled groaned, stretching the ropey strands, but forward movement was lost. Then the engine died. Toshio felt a slithery presence across his legs, then another. The tendrils began to tighten and pull. Gasping, he managed to twist onto his back and groped for the knife sheathed at his thigh. The tendrils were sinuous and knotty, clinging to whatever they touched, and when one brushed the back of Toshio's exposed left hand, the boy cried out from searing pain. The fins squealed to each other, and there were sounds of vigorous movement not far away, but other than a brief prayer that nobody else was caught, Toshio had no time to think of anything but the fight at hand. The knife came free, gleaming like hope. And hope brought hope as two small strands parted under his slashing attack. Another, larger one, took several seconds to saw through. It was replaced almost instantly by two more. Then he saw where he was being drawn. A deep gash split the metal mound. Inside, A writhing mass of filaments waited. Deep within, a dozen meters farther up, something sleek and gray lay enmeshed in a forest of deceptively languid foliage. Toshio felt open-mouthed steam fill his face mask. The reflection of his own eyes, dilated and stricken, was superimposed on the motionless figure of Sassia. Gentle as her life had been, though not her death, the tide rocked her. With a cry, Toshio resumed hacking. He wanted to call out to Hikaki to let the party leader know of Sassia's fate, but all that came out was a roar of loathing of the Kithrupan creeper. Leaves and fronds flew through the churning water as he sliced out his hatred, to little good as the tendrils fell more numerous about him to draw him toward the gash. Ladder climber, sharp-eyed rhymer, call a fix for seeking finders, trill sonar through the leaf blinders. Hikaki calling. Above the churning of his struggle and the hoarseness of his breath, Toshio could hear combat sounds of dolphin teamwork. Quick trills of trinary, unslowed for human ears, except that one brief command and the whining of their harnesses.
Here! Here I am!
He slashed at a vine that threatened his air hose, barely missing the hose itself. He licked his lips and tried to whistle in trinary.
Holding off, the sea squid's beak, suckers tight and outlook bleak, havoc done, on Sassia wreaked.
Lousy form and rhythm, but the Finns would hear it better than a shout in Anglic. After just 40 generations of sapience, they still thought better in an emergency when using whistle rhyme. Toshio could hear the sounds of combat coming closer. But as if hurried by the threat, the tentacles began drawing him back more rapidly toward the gash. Suddenly a sucker-covered strand wrapped itself around his right arm. Before he could shift his grip, one of the burning knots reached his hand. He screamed and tore the tendril away, but the knife was lost to darkness. Other filaments were falling all about him. At that moment, Toshio became distantly aware that someone was talking to him, slowly and in Anglic.
Says there are ships out there. Vice Captain Takata Jim wants to know why Hikaki hasn't sent a monopulse confirmation.
It was Aki's voice, calling from the ship. Toshio couldn't answer his friend. The switch for the sled radio was out of reach, and he was preoccupied.
Don't respond to this message,
Aki went on obligingly. Toshio moaned at the irony as he tried to pry a tendril off his face mask without doing further insult to his hands.
Just transmit a monopulse and come on back, all of you. We think there's a space battle going on over Kithrup. Probably those crazy ETs followed us here and are fighting over the right to capture us, just like at Morgren.
Gotta close up now. Radio silence. Get back as soon as you can. Aki out.
Toshio felt a tendril seize hold of his air hose. A solid grip this time.
Sure, Aki, old friend. He grunted as he pulled at it. I'll be going home just as soon as the universe lets me.
The air hose crimped shut, and there was nothing he could do. Fog filled his face mask. As he felt himself blacking out, Toshio thought he saw the rescue party arrive, but he couldn't be sure if it was real or a hallucination. He wouldn't have expected Kipiru to lead the charge, for instance, or for that Finn to have such a ferocious demeanor, heedless of the burning suckers. In the end, he decided it was a dream. The laser flashes were too bright, the Sazer tones too clear, and the party came toward him with pennants waving in their wake like the cavalry that 5 centuries of Anglic-speaking man had come to associate with the image of rescue. Chapter 2 Galactics. On a ship in the center of a fleet of ships, a phase of denial was passing.
Giant cruisers spilled out of a rent in space to fall toward the pinpoint brilliance of a nondescript reddish sun. One by one they tumbled from the luminous tear. With them came diffracted starlight from their point of departure, hundreds of parsecs away. There were rules that should have prevented it. The tunnel was an unnatural way to pass from place to place. It took a strong will to deny nature and call into being such an opening in space. The Episiarch, in its outraged rejection of what is, had created the passage for its Tandu masters. The opening was held by the adamant power of its ego, by its refusal to concede anything at all to reality. When the last ship was through, the Episiarch was purposely distracted, and the whole collapsed with soundless violence. In moments, only instruments could tell that it had ever been. The affront to physics was erased. The Episiarch had brought the Tandu Armada to the target star well ahead of the other fleets, those who would challenge the Tandu for the right to capture the Earthship. The Tandu sent impulses of praise to the Episiarch's pleasure centers. It howled and waved its great furry head in gratitude. To the Tandu, an obscure and dangerous form of travel had once again proved worth the risks. It was good to arrive on the battlefield before the enemy. The added moments would give them a tactical edge. The Episiarch only wanted things to deny. Its task now finished, it was returned to its chamber of delusions, to alter an endless chain of surrogate realities until its outrage was needed by the masters once again. Its shaggy, amorphous shape rolled free of the sensory web, and it shambled off, escorted by wary guardians. When the way was clear, the Acceptor entered and climbed on spindly legs to its place within the web. For a long moment, it appraised reality, embracing it. The Acceptor probed and touched and caressed this new region of space with its far-flung senses. It gave out a crooning cry of pleasure. "Such leakage," the Acceptor joyously announced. "I had heard the hunted were sloppy sophants, but they leak even as they scan for danger. They have hidden on the second planet. Only slowly do the edges of their psychic shields congeal to hide from me their exact location. Who were their masters to teach these dolphins so well to be prey? Their masters are the humans, themselves unfinished," the leading stalker of the Tandu replied. Its voice was a rhythmic pattern of rapid clicks and pops from the ratchet joints of its mantis legs. "The Earthlings are tainted by wrong belief and by the shame of their own abandonment. The noise of 3 centuries shall be quieted when they are eaten. Then our hunter's joy will be as yours is when you witness a new place or thing." "Such a joy," the Acceptor agreed. "Now stir to get details," the stalker commanded. "Soon we do battle with heretics. I must tell your fellow clients their tasks." The Acceptor turned in the web as the stalker left and opened its feelings to this new patch of reality. Everything was good. It passed on reports of what it saw, and the masters moved the ships in response. But with the larger part of its mind, it appreciated, it accepted, the tiny red sun, each of its small planets, the delicious expectancy of a place soon to become a battlefield. Soon it felt the other war fleets enter the system, each in its own peculiar way. Each took a slightly inferior position, forced by the early arrival of the Tandu. The Acceptor sensed the lusts of warrior clients and the cool calculations of calmer elders. It caressed the slickness of mind shields rigidly held against it, and wondered what went on within them. It appreciated the openness of other combatants, who disdainfully cast their thoughts outward, daring the listener to gather in their broadcast contempt. It swept up savage contemplations of the acceptor's own annihilation as the great fleets plunged toward each other and bright explosions began to flash. The acceptor took it all in joyfully. How could anyone feel otherwise when the universe held such wonders?
This ends side one of cassette one.